Welcome to the Land Geek Podcast, your resource for information and tips to making money by buying and selling land. Let the Land Geek show you how to make a passive income by working smart, not working hard. Learn strategies and tricks to make money buying and selling raw land today. And here's the man that's going to help you do that, the Land Geek.
Hey, it's Mark Podolsky, the Land Geek, from your favorite real estate website, www.thelandgeek.com. And this is a real treat because today I have a new and improved Jerran Frazier from Carlsbad, California, from reserveland.com, landhub.com. You hear the applause. Jerran, the big benefit of getting sick is you're svelte, you're looking good, man.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. I honestly, I don't know if it's meant to be, but it's meant to be that I'm down 7 pounds in a week from overly sweating. I had 4 nights of the most uncomfortable. I felt like I was laying in a swimming pool. But and for those who have had the flu before or a high fever and broken it, imagine breaking it 4 days in a row or 5 days in a row, because that's what happened. I got a little nervous, you know, day 4 or 5. I was like, hey, is this normal? And then the worst.
Did you get a flu shot?
Shut up. Are you crazy?
You don't get a flu shot.
A full conspiracy theorist.
Oh, no. For sure, the guy who likes to discuss earthclinic.com is not getting a flu shot.
Folks, let's be honest with you. They're putting the virus in your body. The likelihood of you getting the flu is about probably greater than actually getting, you know, than you being out there talking to somebody and getting the germ yourself.
So most likely you suffered needlessly an extra 2 or 3 days because of your warped medical views.
Well, just to preface that one, my warped medical views come from, as we've already discussed, a very bad reaction to an antibiotic 7 years ago. So okay. As mentioned, I have not put a single drug in my body, not even a Tylenol. We talked about this.
I know.
It's six or seven years. I can't count right now, but 6 or 7 years. And what's unbelievable is this, I had 2 days of super high fever. And everybody should know this, but a fever is good for you. A fever is fighting off infection.
Right.
A fever is not bad. So when people say, you know, give ibuprofen, you know what, to be honest with you, a fever actually is good. It's fighting infection. So by taking Tylenol or acetaminophen or whatever you put in your body, ibuprofen, it's actually hindering maybe the healing process a little bit because you want that fever to break and do what the body's supposed to do. The body's wonderfully made and it can handle these infections. So anyway, a couple of days, it was nasty. I was in bed I've never honestly been hit that hard in my entire life. I'm a guy that usually not a baby and just gets up and gets it. I couldn't move, dude. I was in bed for 2 days straight.
Well, I know what's funny about that is because I had another friend who got the flu really badly and her husband is a doctor. And he was explaining to me there's drift and there's shift. So China gets the flu like 8 months before us. And that's how we know how to make these flu shots, right? So we analyze the virus from China. It comes to us 7, 8 months later. And that's called drift. It just drifts over here. Well, what happens is with the flu or all viruses is this one, if it's a different strain, it's called a shift. And then there's no fighting it. We don't have any answer for it. And then, you know, we just have to hope that it drifts back to us. And then we had enough time to make a flu shot. But since you're never going to get a flu shot, it really doesn't apply to you at all.
Yeah. You know what? My body's, like I said, wonderfully made. It can beat these things. I did do a lot of probiotics, a lot of raw apple cider vinegar, which we've talked about in the past.
Right.
I drank lemon juice every day, lemon, just pure organic lemon juice and water every day, lots and lots and lots of water. And I, you know, literally when I first broke the fever the third day, I was back. I mean, I was like back to myself, although I kind of had some congestion and that was my worry. But I'll tell you, most of the time when I get sick, Mark, my congestion will turn into, you know, green. You know how it is. The phlegm turns green. You get a an infection in your lungs and respiratory issues. And I didn't, what's weird is I never had any, I had the respiratory issues for, you know, just when things started And then after day three or four, they were gone. I didn't have any infection down in my respiratory system. So I must have just done the right smart things. I didn't eat any sugars. I mean, sugar's obviously the devil when it comes to these infections. So, so it was.
Look, I'm glad you're healthy. I'm glad you're back on the mend. But as much as everyone wants to hear about our maladies, we got to talk about making money in raw land.
You know what? You are so selfish. Here I am, just want to talk about life and being happy and being healthy. And all you want to talk about is money.
Look, this is respecting our audience.
Do you think our audience cares about money?
I think they care about accumulating wealth.
Number three is finances.
Wait, say that again.
Health, family finances.
Health, family finances. Fine.
Okay.
How are the kids?
They're awesome. How are your kids?
How's Lauren? They're great. They're great.
Okay. Yeah. Now back to money.
Back to money. Okay. Finances. So we had a gold mastermind session. You were too sick to attend, but we kind of got into the detail of this, but I want to get your perspective on it. What do you think of the legalization of marijuana, and how do you think it'll affect the micro economies where in the states where they are legalizing it and the macro economy as a whole?
It's a tough one, Mark. It's interesting because I'm not a big proponent of drugs in general. I know you are.
Okay, that's nice. I'm not at all.
No, I'm. It's a very interesting subject. From a economic standpoint, it's even more unique. But you know, we talked briefly about the macro impact, and there are some interesting things that could pop up, especially we talk about land and sort of how the two interact with each other. And you and I won't answer those questions, but there will obviously be a higher demand for land,
right?
Especially land and soil that's good to grow marijuana. I don't have the slightest clue of how marijuana is grown.
It's a plant.
I understand that. But I think
in some places it just grows wild.
Yes, but sure it does.
I know. It just grows wild everywhere.
Officer, I don't know how those got there. They're just growing in my closet.
It was like, it's like a weed. I don't know what happened.
Those lights, I don't know where they came from either. I understand it's a plant, but they do, I'm sure, genetically modify these plants
to
do different things so that they grow a different way for different reasons. And then you go into the, I was just listening on the news the other day talking about how they've got 50 types of products now that they're sort of integrating with marijuana, whether it's.
What do you mean? Like hemp? Like hemp stuff?
What's that? No, like gluten-free goods to eat and. All these different foods and I mean, just crazy stuff. I next thing you know, they'll be feeding your dog, pot brownies. I don't know what they've got going on, but you
don't have an issue with it ethically. You would invest in it.
No,
you would be fine having financial gain from it.
No, I wouldn't.
I'm not saying you're going to be a dispensary.
That's not true. No, I won't.
You have an ethical issue with it.
100%.
Really?
100%. I'll tell you why.
We're gonna argue about this, but let me hear your argument.
We're not gonna argue. I'll tell you why. It's simple because for me, there's a couple of things that I always made a promise or a pact with myself when I was younger that I wouldn't get involved with. One was alcohol, and two was drugs.
Okay, anything. But that's different though. You're not getting involved in it.
And three is gambling or make financial gain from it.
Yeah, you were 13 years old. And you said I'm not gonna make financial gain.
I wasn't. I was 20 years old, sitting in a hospital bed, surviving something very silly of me. Something happened to me. And I told myself, I will never again touch it or be involved with it.
I want to hear the story.
No?
Real quickly, the two minute version.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Got sick one night, got super sick. I was I've always had kind of weak lungs as a kid. I had really bad asthma growing up. 18, 19 years or 20 years old, I'm working at a restaurant with a guy. I'm feeling terrible. He goes, come to my house. And I live in San Diego, so I'm close to Mexico. This gentleman was in Mexico quite a bit. He was, I think half his family lives in Tijuana. Another half lived in San Diego. He goes, hey, I got some antibiotics at my house. Go to his house. He gives me an antibiotic. I take an antibiotic. And then he gave me a puff of something that I inhaled, which I was not a big person invited. I didn't smoke very much, but I was feeling so so bad and disgusting that I thought, well, maybe a puff of his reefer would help me solve some of these health problems.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, it was laced with something that I don't know what it was laced with. I'm driving home and I pass out, and the guy behind me in on the road takes me to the hospital, which is right around the corner. So now I'm in the hospital. I'm 20 years old. And as I'm going out and as I'm coming to, and I'm in the hospital, I basically made a pact that, hey, God, if I survive this, I promise I will never touch any drugs, and I will never financially benefit at any level from drugs or gambling or alcohol, which I've literally made that a pact since I was a 20-year-old, and I've never gone back. So it's more of a personal ethical issue. And for me, like, I'm not going to argue with like you as to why I believe that way. It's just because something happened in my life, and that's why I'm
I'm not going to argue with you and say, yeah, oh, you should change your view. I'm just going to make the counter argument that I think as long as you're not hurting someone else and you're an adult,
yeah,
you're over 18,
yeah,
I don't have an ethical issue with it, right?
But how many kids under 18 are going to at some level try to buy marijuana from something that you're involved with?
Yeah, I mean, but you can make that argument about cigarettes, which are legal. About, yeah, alcohol, which is legal.
And I don't get involved in any of that stuff. So.
Right, exactly. So, you know, the slippery slope argument doesn't really apply, I think. And now, you know, you can take it to the furthest extent and say, well, why not just legalize all drugs? Well, you know, it's clinically proven that marijuana is really bad for your lungs. But in moderation, it is not addictive. You know, you don't hear about people going out smoking pot and killing people. Methamphetamine, you do. Cocaine, yeah, people have heart attacks. You know, these Schedule I drugs are really, really bad for you in society. And you can't necessarily make that strong argument for marijuana. And plus, there's medicinal uses for it. So there's a lot of, you know, you can make a fairly convincing case that the plant isn't so bad for you and so bad for society. And if people can, you know, profit from it as a whole and no one's getting hurt, you know, why not? Look, alcohol is legal. So I don't know how many deaths there are that are alcohol related, but I know it's marijuana related deaths are a fraction of it. So I don't necessarily have an ethical issue with it. Now that's a macro level. Now from a micro level, would I ever smoke pot for my children? No. Would I ever tell my children this is okay to do? It's healthy for you? No. For the Podolsky family, this is off the table. And, you know, I'm going to teach my children from a very young age, don't do any drug. Why do you need to do drugs?
Do you do drugs? You said not in front of your children. I'm getting nervous, dude.
No, I'm saying, you know, if it was legal, I wouldn't do it.
What's your rabbi's phone number?
I don't drink in front of my children either. I just don't, as a role model, I personally, and if you drink in front of your kids, I'm not judging you because you're an adult. And you know, if you can do anything responsibly, I'm fine with it. I personally, you know, I take a very rigid view of it. So I don't think I'm right. I just think that's what I do. And it's my choice, and you know,
yeah.
So whatever.
What you're trying to say right now is that you are an opportunist.
Not an opportunist. Look, we're in business, right? And we're looking at this from our land business, and that's it. And look, if you want to call me an opportunist, because I see an opportunity in states where they legally can grow marijuana, and I can say, look, with all ships ride. All ships ride with the tide, right? And so if these states and their economies are going to boom and I can own land there and that land is also going to go up in prices, right, let's go do with it. I mean, let's take San Francisco as an example, the San Francisco real estate market. Silicon Valley comes in, all these instant millionaires, what happens to the housing? San Francisco, you could argue, is unaffordable because you've got all these 20-something multimillionaires. And they're just bidding up the housing market intrinsically. You know what I'm saying? These houses in any other part of the country would be $200,000-$300,000 houses. In San Francisco, they're a million, million two, million three. So that's all I'm saying. our land in these states might intrinsically only be worth, you know, a fraction of the value. But again, if all ships ride with the tide and there's all these instant millionaires in those states and they need to put their money somewhere. And we all know real estate and land are great investments. Inevitably, prices are going to rise in those areas. And from a macro level, it's just going to, everyone's going to benefit from it, right? I do better financially. I buy your product or service. Now you do better financially.
Agreed.
So from that aspect, that's how I feel about it. And I resent you calling me an opportunist.
It's okay. that's how I introduce, when people say, what's your title? What do you do for work? I said, I'm a professional opportunist.
Yeah.
Look, Mark, you and I are very similar.
But let me ask you, would you start as a strategy right now, implementing that and looking in those areas and start investing? Or you're just going to well, look, I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm not adjusting for this. Because look, it could be a total boom bust scenario. And we can discuss that next.
Yeah, no, I agree, Mark. And I think if you go back to it, I mean, if everyone starts growing weed on their property, in theory, does it actually necessarily impact land as a whole or people wanting to go buy land? Well, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely, because you have an asset. Absolutely. This asset is an income-producing asset now. You're not just putting a house on there. You're putting an asset, which is marijuana, that people can go and sell and make money. So yeah, absolutely. Just like if I had agricultural land in Nevada or a solar farm in Nevada, that land becomes much higher in value. The highest and best use.
Okay, so let's go back. Okay, so interesting thing here. Okay, so everyone starts growing weed on their property, right? And we know that weed has a particular price, but just like anything else, supply and demand drives prices up or down. Well, if everyone's growing weed, in theory, the price of weed is basically worthless or, you know, very cheap because everyone owns land and everyone's going to be growing weed. So it just, to me, at some level, I believe like the thought of there being sort of a, you know, the asset, you know, the income producing land, you know, I just have a suspicion that there's not going to be, it's not going to totally change the market, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. And there's a huge risk with it right now. If you want to borrow money to set up one of these shops, like a dispensary in one of these cities, the interest rate is like 20 to 30% because of the high risk. And the risk is that the federal government is still saying, look, this is a Schedule I drug. This is illegal, right? We have a federal state issue going on here. Now, our current administration, I believe, is taking the view that, look, we're gonna look the other way right now. We have bigger fish to fry than you small time, you know, pot smokers, right?
Yeah.
What could happen? What I see as being the bigger risk for the market is Merck, Amgen, Genentech, you know, bigger companies coming in, the tobacco companies coming in and saying, look, we have billions of dollars. We're going to do this in a way where it's going to be much more efficient. We're going to take advantage of economies of scale. And all you little guys, see ya. Let the government tax us. It's fine. And in that scenario, if you're involved in those companies and you own those companies' stocks, yeah, you're going to benefit from it. But generally, from a macroeconomic perspective, I don't know if it's going to have as much of a broad impact as it otherwise would. Although, you know, look, a multi-billion dollar new market, it's going to impact everybody, don't you think? But I think if you make a big bet to do it yourself, that's a big risk. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, well, and while I'm talking to you, I'm actually buying the new domain weedmart.com.
Okay, of course you are, 99 cents.
I thought Walmart, Weedmart, I mean, it just only makes sense.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That I think that would definitely be. Let's see. I'm just actually, funny enough, I'm checking. No, there's not even. That's how. You know what? If you want to talk about an exploited domain name, that's that all those domains have been taken for 15 years because people have been expecting this to happen.
You know what though? Honestly, I'm going to give you a compliment. I love the way you're thinking.
Yeah.
Like it's just great. Like I don't think, oh, you know what? I should lock up a cool domain name and sell it for $100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really being an opportunist.
Yeah. Markets, it's an interesting subject, but you're right. You know, the big boys could step in. I mean, anything could happen. Anything could change the market. Like you said, you get a Fortune 500 company with more money than they know what to do with to back an idea like this. And those guys are real opportunists, right? Those guys are the ones that come in and go, they seize a $1 billion opportunity.
Right. Like, a small guy takes all the risk.
Yep.
And then they say, okay, these guys are doing well. Bye-bye. We're going to enter.
Yeah. So anyway, it's such a hard question, you know, to pose to me now too. Like, would I go secure land? If somebody goes, hey, you know, Duran, you have the ability to go make $1 million this year by grabbing land in an area that's prime for marijuana production and growth. It's a tough one, dude, because I do know there's medicinal purposes for it. I do know that if anybody should be smoking weed, it's probably me because I've got so much stinking energy. But my friends always go, you know, it's really funny, Duran. You're one of the few guys I think that she actually should be smoking weed. But I think there are a lot of positives, but at the same time, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if the negatives outweigh the positives. I will say from a standpoint of policing and everything else that we're doing focused on marijuana, it's ridiculous. I mean, focus on the drugs that are a lot more harmful to
society. Yeah, I mean, I think the decriminalizing of marijuana is a very good thing for society.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So, I think if the time came and again, it'd be interesting now to see what are the best climates, right? Like, I think Colorado and Washington are good climates to grow marijuana as well, correct?
Correct. And we actually talked about it in detail, how we're actually going to implement strategies in those states.
Yeah.
To really, you know, there are certain counties, there are certain areas that are better than others. And there's definitely ways to do that. So if you want to, you know, learn more about how to do that, go to the Gold Mastermind on www.thelandgeek.com. This is a shameless plug, by the way, for people to go in and enroll in the Gold Mastermind program. Because, you know, there's four or five of us each week that do talk about this stuff, but in more detail than what we do in the podcast. So that's really getting into the nitty gritty of it and getting support. So, all right, my shameless plug is done for the mastermind. Those are the two states right now. There are other states that we could be tracking as well where ballots are in process, and there's websites where you can track all that. And look, you know, it may not be a bad idea to start speculating in those areas and, you know, gauging the political climate. Again, you know, it's 2-3 minutes of research on the web, finding out where it is. Because look, Wayne Gretzky, don't skate to where the puck is, skate to where the puck is going to be. Right?
That's deep. Wayne Gretzky is a deep.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. We went. You're welcome.
His daughter, she's not. Well, never mind. We won't talk about her. I just saw she was. Have you seen her on the? She's all over the internet these days.
Oh, I don't know anything about it. No.
Oh, it's just every time I turn on the internet, it seems like I hear more about Wayne Gretzky's daughter than I do with Wayne Gretzky.
Oh yeah, I'm pop culture like death. I have no idea what's going on.
That's funny. Anyway, no, I agree. 100% agree with you that if you're looking for a potential opportunity, that this would be from a land perspective. You know, I think they had the. What was that? There was a tree called the Jatropha tree that about 12 years ago, it became kind of like the biofuel topic, because you could basically grow Jatropha trees in any type of climate.
Right.
And Jatropha produces some sort of bio. I don't even know exactly what it is, but something that can be used for powering a lot of different things. So I had several phone calls from people looking to buy land to plant Jatropha trees in Nevada. And I thought, gosh, well, what an interesting niche. So I went and looked, did some research, and it just never got to where, you know, it took off, because biofuels just never did.
Right.
You know, and will marijuana, will we get to a place where it does become popular enough to change the land industry.
Right.
It's hard to gauge.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I have a deal on my desk now I'm doing the due diligence on. It's in Northern Arizona, but what's interesting about that area is it had a huge boom. Then it had the bust in 2008, but all these companies came in and started putting in solar farms. So it's right in the middle of all these solar farms. And my seller is really desperate. I mean, really buying it 10, 15 cents on the dollar. Right.
Uh-huh.
So it's a great price, but the story was really compelling because of what's going on around the area. So it's a 70 lot deal and it's really nice looking deal, but I like the area and the solar farm play of it more than I do the actual lots themselves. What do you think of that?
I think it's interesting that you haven't called me about that deal since you know
that. Yeah, I'm doing that deal
smarter than anyone you know, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. I can't give you every deal.
Oh, I don't want the deal. I just want to give you some advice on how to deal with the utility companies on potentially making that a something that you could in fact just
yeah, I mean, it literally came on my desk yesterday, so it's not like I've been sitting on this thing for a week.
You make it sound like that. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so yeah, no, that's interesting. But yeah, you're right. Again, those are situations where, you know, solar, you know, I'm as mentioned to you, I'm working on a solar project on and off for the last 4 years, in an area where we expect the growth to happen, but there's so many variables involved, and one happens.
What are the two main variables or three main variables
of that project?
Yeah, well, just in solar in general, like what are the risk factors?
Well, first off, your risk factor is the utility. So you have to get what's called a PPA, which is a power purchase agreement. So a PPA is your number one risk factor. So securing a PPA from a utility is what your end result is, which allows your project to be sold.
I see.
Because the PPA is what basically is a handwritten contract that states that you have the ability to sell the power to the power company.
Which I see.
Okay. That's number one. Number two is you're going to need power and infrastructure somewhere around the property, right? You may have property and there's no power 12, 50 miles away. There's power 12 miles away. Well, if you've got power within a mile or two of the property, because it's about to run high, to run those high voltage lines is somewhere around $1 million a mile.
Okay.
So you're spending a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, depending on how much land is there. Just, you know, for reference, a 640 acre piece of land can generate, a flat piece of land can generate between 90 and 100 megawatts on the side currently on that size of a property that large.
How much is that? Is that a lot?
That's a lot.
That is a lot. Okay.
It's a lot. Like a project in that range, 90 would probably be like top 20 projects, 30 projects in the US.
Okay. I'm getting bleary eyed. This is getting too complicated.
It's not very complicating. I mean, at the end of the day, you need power, and infrastructure. You need a relationship with the utility company to build that PPA. And then of course you need ground control. So you need to make sure that you own the land. You have the ability to produce solar.
Right. So that's a planning and zoning issue, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I'll look into it. All right. We're getting short on time here.
Okay.
Time for that special time of the podcast. Time to put Duran on the spot. No, there's no sound effects for this?
Oh, dude, I'm actually looking. While you're saying it, I'm looking for my tip of the day.
Oh, it's tip of the week.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to get that right.
Okay, what's your tip of the week?
Okay, well, my tip of the week is I'm a very big proponent of commodities, as you all know. We've talked about gold and silver. Mark doesn't. You see, Mark just frowned when I said that.
I did not frown. I'm actually having a lunch meeting next week with a gold and silver broker, and we're going to network together.
That's
because
awesome.
People that buy land
buy
also buy gold and silver, and people who buy correct. Gold and silver also buy land.
Correct. So I am one of my favorite sites is a website called Kitco.com. What's that? Kitco. KITCO. .com. Yep. And Kitco basically, the site gives you all the information you know about precious metals. It's one of my favorite websites. I go to it every day. Gold is up $20 an ounce today. As you all know, I'm involved in a mining project which I am flying up to Vancouver, Canada next week to work on. So, so that's what I go to get all my updated information. There's a lot of different things you can find there. You know, events.
But hasn't gold taken a hit overall for 2013?
Yeah, gold to me, if you would ask me, and I'm not an advisor, so don't listen to me, but listen to me. gold mining and exploration companies and the right ones, it would be a monumental time to buy.
Okay, I'm going to put a disclaimer in there. Duran does not know anything. He's not registered.
Yep.
To give advice.
Nope.
So if you based on that one sentence he just said to go out and do, and you lose money, don't come to us.
Yeah, don't come to us. I'm just saying, I will tell you, I bought silver at $9 an ounce, which a while back, which was a good time. Silver at one point went up to 45 or 50 bucks an ounce. I don't remember the number. But anyway, it's to me, it seems like a great time to buy. I don't know if it's true or not, but you know, follow Kitco. Look at the metals. You know, I'm not a big chart guy. I'm just a proponent of knowing that if the Fed's spending $85 billion a month, eventually inflation is lurking.
So, yeah. And gold's a great hedge, as is land.
Yeah.
Against inflation.
Exactly. So
that's why there's that nice little symbiosis, if you will, for us land guys to start talking to these gold and silver guys.
Diversify your portfolio. You can't grow gold and silver on your property. That's the only negative.
That is a negative. You could find it on your property, though.
That is true.
Yeah. So bring your metal detector.
Exactly.
But you do have to own the mineral rights.
No, you don't.
You don't have to own the mineral rights. You own the surface rights, but if you go underneath.
No. Okay. Let's talk about this real quick. Placer and load. Placer is the top above, generally speaking, above the bedrock. Now, again, I'll preface with that I'm not a miner, but basically placer ground is the ground above the bedrock. So if you're digging and you got, you know, 50 or 100 feet before you hit the bedrock, that's your ground. So anything in the placer that you find is yours to keep.
Yeah, but typically speaking, you're not going to find it 50 to 100 feet.
But you are. If you look at, there are some places where, and in Nevada, there are places where you could dig and find, I mean, you're not going to find big, you know, big chunks of gold. But you're going to find, you can find gold. I've been gold panning up there, Mark. I found gold on land.
Really? What was the market value of what you found?
About 13 cents, but doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The fact is you can find gold in the dirt that of your property. It's just, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. You're not going to find anything that's going to be, you know, real income producing gold land, but there are places, and you can get lucky. There are places and areas where you could find gold in your placer ground.
Right. Okay. I've got a great tip for this week. Thank you for your tip, by the way.
You're welcome.
And you know, in the land business, especially in our marketing, we want to add value to our customers, right? And one of the great ways today to add value is to give people something of value and teach them something they didn't know. And one of the great ways to do this is to create a screencast. Now, I own a Mac software product that's like $150 called ScreenFlow. But I just found this new site called screener.com, S-C-R-E-E-N-R.com. Instant screencasts. Just click and record. And it's free. The basic program is free. There's nothing to install or download. You can record on your Mac or PC. Plays everywhere, even on iPhones, and you can start with it completely free. So check out screener.com and start making some screencasts and giving your customers some marketing value there. Duran, are we good?
Anything else to discuss?
All right. I thought this was a good podcast. How do you feel about it?
Good. In fact, you made me divulge the fact that I actually inhaled it at one point in my life.
Hey, look. I like the fact that you're willing to be authentic and share that with us.
I lied. It's not true.
All right, Duran, I appreciate it. Look, if you want to learn more, go to www.thelandgeek.com, subscribe for free, and get all the goodies, the podcast delivered each week to your inbox, get the passive income blueprint, learn how to avoid the three fatal land buying mistakes I see investors making every day. And if you want to buy some wholesale land, give Duran some love. Okay, go to reserveland.com. If you're listing your property, give Duran some more love. Go to landhub.com. And look, if Duran doesn't have anything you want, check out my site, frontierpropertiesusa.com, and invest in some wholesale land. This is Mark Podolsky with Duran Frazier saying, make it a extraordinary week. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Land Geek. Join us next time for more tips, secrets, and information that will help you succeed. Stay connected with The Land Geek on Facebook at facebook.com/TheLandGeek.